Gorgeous Lives on Radio Gorgeous. Today, I'm welcoming onto Radio Gorgeous a woman who was born in a taxi, had an extraordinary childhood, fell into show business, won the TV show New Faces, set up her own charity, sung for the British Prime Minister, is a practicing Catholic, and was recently awarded an OBE. She's still out there treading the boards, well, after 30 years, but we'll talk about that later. She is Nigerian-born Patti Boulay, and today on Gorgeous Lives, we're talking about her life story, which has recently been published in a book called The Faith of a Child. Hi, Patti. Very warm welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you, Josephine. What an introduction. Born in a taxi.
Well, it's true. Yes. Your life's been very dramatic. Can you tell us about the birth?
Well, actually, there's a place in Nigeria across the River Niger. One city is Onitsha and the other city is Asaba. They were living in Asaba and she went into labor. I was the seventh of her nine children. So, you know, the seventh, you kind of pop them out.
Yeah, hopefully.
You know, just hopefully, yeah, indeed. And there was no ambulance. So they put her on a taxi to go across on the ferry. And while she was on the ferry, I just couldn't wait.
Fabulous.
So, I popped out.
So were you on the water when you came out, actually?
No. She was in a taxi, yeah.
Oh, but that's great. She could turn round then. She didn't have to go to hospital.
No, actually, they just took her to the hospital. Yeah. She always used to tell me that story. It's just funny.
It's so you, Patti.
Yes.
And tell me about your background. Who were your mother and father?
Well, my mother, funny enough, her father, oh gosh, what a long story. Her father was kind of King Kokobasi. King Kokobasi, actually, her grandfather was known. He was kind of notorious for slave trade, which I'm not proud of, in the area because
so he's made
still
a lot
had
of money.
I guess probably not. he was dealing with colonials, you know. But what they did was sell enemies.
Wow.
So when my mother was growing up, her father was murdered by his best friend, who then usurped the throne and put my grandmother and my mother and the family into literally slave labor. And it's a long story, but it was quite a nasty time they had. And they had to struggle, which is not a bad thing because I'm kind of like the product of that. It made her into the strongest woman I have ever met. And then she met my father when she was about 15 and they got married.
Was he a bit older?
He was a lot older, yes. He was a lot older than her. And that ended up in tears after seven children. I was the seventh. So they divorced nastily by the time I was two. And then we were farmed out everywhere by our father who got married to a younger wife.
So did he get custody of you?
Yes. Mm. Sorry, because I always think it's kind of standard in Africa that he would get custody. And
but he couldn't cope with you all, could he?
Of course he couldn't cope. He didn't really have anything to do with us. He just wanted to punish her. That's what he wanted to do. He felt, even though my father actually was from the family he was from, he was also what they call, his father was a chief and he became a chief too. But that puts another pressure because the family thinks you should marry a certain kind of wife. It was ever thus. Do you know what I mean? If you're some kind of ruler, everybody thinks this is the kind of wife you should have. And of course, she was not from that village. Didn't speak the language. So the pressure was on him to get another wife, a second wife.
Quite common in Nigeria. Another wife.
Yeah. Good heavens, yes. Oh. That's another story.
But he did get another wife, didn't he?
Yes, he did because she wasn't going to hang around for another wife. But she, you know, she
and
wanted
they were
divorce.
Horrible. They were all horrible to your mother and they accused her of witchcraft.
Oh, they accused her of everything. They made life hell for her. And anyone who's Nigerian would know how. Actually, anyone, even Indian, you can have polygamous family system, except in their case, it couldn't be polygamous because he was Catholic.
Oh.
Okay, so he had to divorce her in order to marry another wife. Mm. And so I guess that's just the way things were. So we were given away and we ended up myself and my two sisters ended up in Onitsha. It was just chaos, chaos on earth. And that's where we grew up for about 18 months before mummy came and found us.
Yeah, tell me about the moment when your mum came and found you. What state were you in?
Ah, yes. We were living with this old lady, bless her, who tried very hard to protect us. She would tie a scarf to stop us from being sexually molested at night and would sleep under the bed because it was a compound and the doors were not that, you know, I mean, it's anyone who's lived in abject poverty knows what I mean.
There's no locks. Like, thank you. A lock.
And so when my mother found us, I had no hair on my head. It's a miracle I have any hair whatsoever
that was
now.
Vitamins.
Scabs. Yeah. Yeah. I had scabs on my head, and she actually didn't recognize us. We were in rags. My sister Maggie, fortunate for her that mummy came on time, because she was the oldest at that time, so she would have been, I don't know, 8, 9, and she was forced to go to the market and sell cassava, and she stepped on a broken bottle. And these women wrapped her legs, her feet up with rags.
Dirty.
So you can imagine. So when our mother, it was amazing because we heard this commotion and the crowd gathered. And so we kind of joined the crowd. When she found us, I remember this, it's so vivid. She just collapsed. You know, she had this car, Opel Cadet, which was kind of like maroon car with cream interior. And she had this polka dot skirt with white lace under. Oh, she looked a vision.
I suppose she looked like an angel from heaven.
She really, I mean, she looked like something out of a fashion magazine in those days. And she just collapsed with her pointy glasses, you know, Dame Edna glasses. And she just sobbed. And all the people were going, this woman gave birth to these children? And she didn't even ask anything. She just put us in the car. That's very mother. Not a word. She finished crying, bundled us in the car, drove off. We never looked back.
She was a very talented woman. She was a fashion designer and
she baked cakes, seamstress. I learned how to sew from her, so I make my own costumes. She did everything to support us. She had a poultry farm at some point. And during the war, during the massacre, she still risked to get, even though we were in enemy territory, she still risked to get people. She turned our double garage into a factory. And she had 14 machines. And she'd have all the, I suppose they were really also running away from, you know, the massacre. But she'll have them sewing. I'm making mattress covers, cushion covers, name it, hemming sheets. And oh, she was just incredible. I just got it from her. I never stop. I do all sorts of things. People say to me, your career. I say, which one? You know.
You got her energy and enthusiasm.
Totally.
Did your talent for show business come out in your youth?
In a sense, I guess maybe it did. I just wasn't aware of it. We didn't have that tradition. It was still vagabonds and strolling minstrels. There were fell around some cootie whom we wouldn't even dream of crossing the club.
But did you used to sing?
You know.
Did you sing?
Well, yes, we did.
In
everyone
church or just before?
Sang in church. I was in a convent school, Catholic convent school. I joined the choir.
Did anybody notice you had talent, though?
I guess they must have, because I was cast in leading roles, school plays, Chimes of Normandy we did. But it wasn't until I came to England that I realised it was a career.
Yeah, because you came to England on holiday. Was that with Maggie, which sister?
No, actually, my eldest sister, Grace, lived in London. Mm. My other sister, who's only 2 years older than me, Rosie, lived in Preston. So she was studying in Preston. Mm-hmm. My sister Grace was here. Maggie was in Paris.
Lovely.
So I came to stay with my sister Grace. And while she was working, well, I was 16 at the time. Uh-huh. And it was an adventure. And I, you know, we take everything. When you survive a war, you take life a day at a time. You know, you don't plan ahead. I admire people who say, well, in 5 years' time, I'm going 5 years' time. You think you have 5 years? So I can, you know, I never think like that. So I take things as they come. And show business was purely an accident. I mean, I just thought Shaftesbury Theatre I was on a bus and I saw the crowd and I went, ah, Madame Tussauds. Because it was a big, kind of, it's in the corner, just like Madame Tussauds is. And there was a big head of hair. And Madame Tussauds used to have this rainbow colored head, which they don't have anymore. And I thought that was it because there was such a long queue. So I joined the queue. 2 hours later, I got to the stage door. And the stage door man said, well, I got there and I said, how much is it to get in? So he looked at me quizzically and said, this is an audition. I went, okay, well, how much is the audition? I just didn't think. And he said, no, dear, you write your name down, you go in there, and then you sing. I said, that's it? Wow. You know, I just thought, you could imagine. I just thought, this is amazing. That's all I have to do to get in there. And went in there. They took us into three at a time and sometimes four. And they take you to the green room. Mm-hmm. And you can hear everyone else auditioning on the tunnel system. And they were all singing the same song.
What song was that?
When the moon is in the seventh house, you know, Aquarius.
But did you know the song?
No. I didn't even know, you know, never heard of hair.
Yeah.
And I thought, good heavens, what's going on? They dress differently and they sing the same song. And so when it was my turn, at this point, I'd realized what was going on. I had seen Marilyn Monroe, you know, in films and the silver curtain. So I'm expecting the silver curtain and everything to rise when you walk in. No, it was graffiti. Yeah. Yes, next. Yeah. And I went in there and I'm looking around, you know, like you do when something is new. And a voice from the dark in the store said, what's your name? So I said, Patricia Ebigwe. So he said, right, are you a member of Equity? And I thought, what's that? And the whole place fell about. And it was quite funny because it was Paul Nicholas who was holding the audition. And he told this story to the audience when they had his This Is Your Life.
Yes. Lovely.
And they brought me on and he told the story of my audition. He just, you know, it's the first time I heard, they thought.
So what did you sing?
Well, okay, when the MD said to me, what are you going to sing? I said, well, I didn't come to sing. So he said, don't you know any songs? I said, yes. I said, The Sound of Music. Well, I'd been in a convent, for goodness sakes, and we had seen it about 20 times. And he said, okay, what key? I said, I don't know, just play it. And so, you know, I broke into the hills are alive with the sound of music. Sang one verse and went, sorry, I don't know the rest. Because I never did learn the whole song. And that was it. You know, it's kind of like, thank you. And I thought, strange
did
day.
Did you have to give your address? You gave your address?
Yes, of course. When they say put your name down, you put your address down and landline. Yeah, so I got home, I was telling my sister about this strange day I'd had. And the phone rang. They wanted me to come and see the show and join the show, which was totally unexpected.
And it was hair.
It was the dreadful, dreaded hair. No, it was a good show, but it's just...
You didn't know that it was going to be... I mean, it's licentious or whatever word is. I mean, it is shocking. I mean, they end up naked at the end of the performance. How did you get around that, being a good 16-year-old Catholic?
Well, you know, when I was watching the show and this scene happened and I went, not doing that. I went, what's that? So the man said, no, you don't have to, because underneath was the Hare Krishna, Krishna, which is what they needed the voice for. As a matter of fact, they were looking for a soprano and no soprano would audition for the show.
Wow.
So that's how I came to be.
Yeah, because I listened to, I looked at you on YouTube and your voice was very high when you were younger. Mm. Even your speaking voice was higher. It's got deeper, hasn't it?
Oh, I had to force it down because it's very childlike.
Anyways. But you were at the right place at the right time, weren't you? Were you in a Hare Krishna outfit then?
No, it wasn't the Hare Krishna outfit. It was so funny because I remember the wardrobe mistress saying, whatever we put you in, you look like you're modeling it. We're trying to turn you into a hippie. So I realized when she said that, actually, because I'm a very analytic person. Mm-hmm. And I thought, hang on a minute. I thought, that means that you actually wear your clothes don't wear you.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so I had to be in the frame of mind to wear those. Mm-hmm. But I just looked like, I remember Paul Nicholas saying that when I came to the audition, I looked like I was going to a bank for an interview, you know, compared to the hippie.
But you're a nice Nigerian girl, aren't you? Come on, you know.
Yeah, most Nigerian girls in those days were nice, actually, because we were really brought up strictly.
Exactly, Now, I want to ask about that because it was a very, it was looking back, now we really know it was the wildest time of the 20th century. I mean, people were having sex, people were taking drugs, especially hair. I mean, it was the hippie musical.
It was.
How did you handle it being this nice girl from Nigeria?
I tell you, the only thing I can say is it's like God had a sense of humor, okay? Because when I joined the show, even though I was the baby of the company, I realized I was miles ahead of them mentally. Because I'd been through more than they could even. None of them knew anything about me. They just thought this naive child from Africa and, you know, fresh. They called me green. Okay. It's made me into a strange person in show business. I just avoided socializing for many years with people I work with. Because all I could see was this careless mentality. I thought it was irresponsible and careless. The sex was rampant. The hygiene was non-existent. The drugs, on my birthday, they tried. I mean, the entire company wanted to see me stoned once. But what they didn't realize was I just survived a genocide. And even 1,000 of them could convince me to do anything I didn't want to. They baked the cake and I looked at it. I thought, no, this doesn't look like cake my mother bakes. Not eating it. The truth is, I didn't trust any of them.
But that actually gave you a self-preservation, which if you hadn't had that, it could have gone horribly wrong.
That's why I said, God is amazing. Seriously, who knows which way I would have gone. But yeah, self-preservation. I've never thought of that. I just think of it as having a damn good guardian angel. You know, that's how I always look
at
it.
And you are, have you been teetotal all your life then? Are you teetotal?
I drink. My children tease me because my daughter is a wine expert.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And she had her wine business.
Yes.
And she said to me, Mommy, you're the only one I know who opens a bottle of wine and it lasts 3 months.
Okay. So you like 2 or 3 glasses a week.
Two or three glasses a month.
Okay.
You know, so I don't really drink.
No.
But if people are toasting, I would.
Yeah. But right place at the right time.
Precisely.
Again. Yeah.
It's never been my thing. It gives me a headache anyway.
So maybe
I started too late, really. That's why.
Okay. So you were performing. And then what was the next step after hair? And also, when did you meet your husband, who is still your manager?
When I was in here about 5.5 months, when a new show came into the West End called Two Gentlemen of Verona. And it happens that the people who were bringing it into the West End were the same people who wrote Hair.
Oh.
And they were looking for the role of Sylvia and asked me about an audition. I think after the audition, they realized I was probably too young and naive and only just into show business. So they made me part of the quartet, which was very nice of them. So I left here and joined Two Gentlemen of Verona. And then I was cast as to tour with a girl group called The Flirtations.
Fabulous.
And I spent 9 months with them of hell. And I left and went into Jesus Christ Superstar. So
fabulous.
Back into the West End.
Fabulous.
Yeah. And then I worked with a wonderful director. My first pantomime, a director called Wendy Toy, bless her, may she rest in peace, and changed my name because my first role was as Nyom Nyom in The Black Mikado. And I had the...
So everyone was black in the cast?
Everyone was black.
Fabulous.
Except for Michael Dennison, who played Pooh Bah. And the truth is, I had the hit in the show, which was The Moon and I, the sun whose rays are all ablaze, and as Nyom Nyom, and the DJs couldn't pronounce my name. So I thought, oh, that name has got to go. But the good thing about the show was that I met my husband, because he owned the theater with Larry Parnes. And after 18 months, I met him on the last week. Mm-hmm. So that was a blessing. And
he was a real gentleman, and he was your friend for a long time, wasn't he?
Oh, he was my, honestly, my best, still is my best friend. He became, gradually became my manager, because about 2 years after we met, I did New Faces.
Yes, and... well, we'll go into that. I just want to talk about your relationship with him.
Oh.
Stephen. Stephen, is that his
name? Stephen,
yeah.
Yes.
Now, there was one big problem, and you've got to tell us about him. There was one, apart from him being perfect, tell us the problem.
Nobody's perfect.
Yeah.
He was married when we met. It was his second marriage. And he had three children by his first wife. I think he married at the age of 17, first wife. He had a child by the second wife. And, well, I didn't know at the time he was married. And we met to do a recording. He was recording with an actress who couldn't sing. And he used that excuse, he said, to come and introduce himself to me. But we met to discuss the contract and everything at the Dorchester for tea. And 2 hours later, he said to me, will you marry me? I thought, what? I mean, I'd never seen him before. I thought, good heavens. He may be gorgeous, but he's a bit loopy. I thought, you've got to avoid this one.
Yeah.
This one is to be avoided by all cost. But thank God he was persistent. But we went through hell and back in our relationship.
What, because of the divorce?
Because of the divorce, and because, oh, I hate to say this, because his ex-wife is now late. And, you know, I went to Africa to make a film. Mm. And it's so incredible because we only slept with each other once. Mm-hmm. Okay? And which is crazy. And I just, anyway, went to Africa to make a film and realized I was pregnant.
Oh, my God. And how old were you?
21.
Oh, my God.
It was bittersweet.
And were you a virgin?
No.
Okay.
No, because I had a boyfriend about 2 years before I met him.
Mm-hmm. But still, I was single. You'd only made love once.
Once?
Yeah. But obviously destiny. Again.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, the funny thing was they were told I was not capable of having children.
So you didn't take precaution.
So I didn't take precaution. Yeah. And I didn't take precaution with the one before either.
Yeah. And
so this is incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so when I found out I was pregnant, I was scared because my mother was scary.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And your mother would Mommy not approve of a white, twice divorced,
Thank
already
you.
Married.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, so, you know, I just thought, oh dear. But Mummy also
that's
knew.
All you thought, the first thing you thought was your mother.
It's the first thing, my dear. In life, do you know, it's funny. Even when I was in England and she was in Nigeria, she was always the, what will Mummy do? I really expected her to slap me over the phone. Okay. But thank God she was like that. She knew about Stephen, obviously, but it was totally ignored. Totally ignored. She was very pleased for me. Because my older sister intervened. She said, leave it with me. Because I said to her, how do I tell mommy? She said, leave it with me. We were all expecting that you were never going to have a child and you always wanted six. Right from when I was little, I always said, I'll have six children. That's my lot, okay? I ended up with six. Four step and two of mine.
True.
You know, my mother reminded me years
That's
later.
Funny. Yeah.
It's funny. And so my sister said to her, well, okay. She said, the good news is she is pregnant, which we didn't expect. So she did well because she softened the blow a lot. Mm. And my daughter was about, I don't know, maybe 9 months when she came to visit.
Oh, really? So 9 months.
Okay. 9 months.
And you'd done it all on your own, Patty?
Oh, totally. Wasn't easy.
Was Stephen still with his wife then?
Yes, he was.
Oh, gosh.
He was. Mm. But I did let go of him and say, no, thank you. Yeah. I am too young. You've done this twice. Yeah. What makes you think, you know, you see what I mean?
Yeah,
sort of, you know, I went, no, not having any of that. This child I bring up, I've got such a large family.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be a lone mother, even though I'm in England. So anyway, he decided in the end, I don't know if he was him or his wife, but somehow he just decided that he was going to stay with me no matter what. So I said to him, it's not that easy. You have to go through my mother. Well, It's true. I said, you have to go through my mother. Because I know in England, people think, oh, you're 21, you're grown up.
Yeah.
Excuse me? No. So I said, no, my mother has to say yes. So he said, what if she doesn't like me? I said, we have a very long engagement. That's all I can say. If she doesn't like you, there must be a reason. We'll have a very long engagement. Yeah. And he was quite funny because he said to me, what is it? Just tell me one good thing that I can put in front of her. He said, I'm twice married. I've got 4 children in tow. I'm white, for goodness sakes. I said to him, she's not going to see any of that. I said, she's not going to see any of that. I said, she's going to see you. I said, she's going to see your spirit. That's all I can tell you. And if she doesn't like your spirit, we have a very long engagement. But as a matter of fact, they spent 2 hours together and became absolute solid mother and son. And I was surprised when she said to me, of all my children, you're going to make the best marriage. And she was right. We're still here 42 years later.
It's the most wonderful story. It's amazing.
She was an amazing woman, seriously.
No, that's really amazing.
You can see why I trusted her judgment.
Yeah.
100%. My father didn't even feature in this.
No.
Because he wouldn't know.
That's beautiful. So you became a couple, you got the baby, but you were still working very hard. And then this program called New Faces, which I want to just tell the listeners, there weren't many TV programs on then. It was a reality TV and people voted for you and they judged you. It was very like sort of ones that are on now. But the difference was the whole of Britain watched it, you know.
That is true.
You know, so it was like, if you go on that, everybody knows you are. Your household name overnight, aren't you?
That is true.
And whereas now it's like, oh, which programme were you on?
Yeah, that's very true. I was blessed. I was very lucky.
But you weren't in the mood for going on the TV programme, were you? Can you tell us what happened?
Well, number one, I didn't have a TV. Okay.
So it didn't mean anything to
you. So it didn't mean anything to me. Number two, when I finally heard about it, because an agent asked me, because I changed my name, and he said, you've done all this work. Nobody's going to know who you are unless you do this program under a new name. So I thought, oh, whatever. Okay. Watched it. I went, no way. Because the judges were cruel. There was Tony Hatch. There was Mickey Most. And on my day, I had Rosemary Horner. And I remember there was another man. They were vicious. And I thought, no. Oh, no. I thought, oh, God, this will finish my career completely. But unfortunately, I went to the audition because I didn't want to upset my agent. And the audition started at 9. I turned up at 10:30 because I thought it'd be over by then. And I can say, well, I did go.
Yeah.
But when I got there, there was a strike. So it was terrible. The audition didn't start till about 1 o'clock. So I had to, I was the last one, and it was the last series. I was the last person to be auditioned for New Faces. And so my agent called me and said, you're in, you're going to do the program. I went, I really don't want to. I said, I'm so scared of it. And that week, I lost my brother, who was a pilot, in a plane crash. And in those days, you didn't just jump on a plane. You had to book 2 or 3 weeks in advance. So I had to book, and my agent and Stephen, you know, said to me, listen, you'll go mad waiting here. Why don't you do the program? And then I thought, yeah, what the hell? Couldn't be any worse than losing my brother.
But you, so you went in there in a very depressed...
I was numb.
So upset.
Actually, yeah. I was just numb.
Yeah.
I was so angry with God. I was numb. But I ended up having the maximum point. The only person in the entire history of New Faces. Yeah.
Wow.
To have the maximum.
So what was it like getting 10, 10, 10, 10 or something?
Well, Josephine, you need to know this. In the studio, you couldn't hear them. It wasn't like...
Were you in a box or something?
No, you were so far away because you had an orchestra.
Mm.
They were in kind of like a different place of them. Yeah. So, you know, to me, I was just smiling nicely in case the camera was on me, which is what you do. You just stand there and grin like an idiot, not knowing whether they said 0-0-0 or 10-10-10. So it was quite amazed.
How did you find out when's the moment they told you you'd won it?
No, it's when the audience reacts.
Oh.
And you go, oh, what happened? Oh, yeah. What? There is a thing. Then it flashes up rather quite late, 120. Wow, I'm thinking, that's high.
That sounds quite good.
You know, and it turned out that was absolute maximum points, 10, 10, 10 on all things. Yeah.
So you were literally, you know how they say that thing is you're famous overnight? It really did happen to you, didn't it?
Oh, it did. It did. I mean, I had done 3 years musicals, three and a half
slogging
years.
Slogging away.
So to me, that was the training that came into that 3 minutes.
Actually, thank God that you'd done the three
years.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's like a piece of jigsaw puzzle, isn't it?
Yeah.
Totally, that completes. Totally. When you actually get to there, you realize all those pieces came together to get you there. Yeah.
So you were overnight success, and then you had to really start working then.
It was incredible because I went to Nigeria for my brother's funeral. And when I came back, it had aired. So they showed it, and there were cameramen at the airport. And I thought maybe some star has arrived. And I'm thinking, what they, where? And they kind of, you know, Patty. And which Patty? You know, and it's amazing. I was looking around, you know, oh, it was funny. Some of the pictures they had in the papers were quite funny because kind of like sat on my head. So people must have thought, why is she? You know, I was just looking back for whoever they were photographing. It was wonderful. It was very good. And then I had to really start working. Mm-hmm. And it was, I had to start learning, I should say. And I asked Stephen at the time, I said to him, well, you need to handle this for me because I haven't got a clue.
Yeah.
I haven't got a clue. And we had discussions like he said to me, well, you've got a choice. There was a hit record, one of those gimmicky things. It was an obvious hit, but I just said to him, but what do I follow it with?
Yeah.
So he said, okay. He said, if you're thinking that way, you have a choice. You can be a household name or you can be an instant success. I said, no. I want to be a household name. Mm. I want to steadily build on this. Mm. I don't want to suddenly go up there. He said, okay, so this is what we do. We tour. We have PR. I said, that's fine. He said, but it's going to cost you a lot of money. I said, that's okay.
You literally toured Britain nonstop, didn't you?
Oh, nonstop for literally 8 years, I would say.
God. It was like these working class men's clubs.
Oh, yeah.
It?
Unbelievable. Yeah. You had funny experiences, you know. I mean, I learned my craft in those places.
Crowd control, I suppose.
Crowd control.
And
you know.
Also the witty comebacks. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm. And the other thing is, now I realize, because I now give lectures at universities, I had no idea that I could walk into a room, read the atmosphere in no time. Because you had to.
Yeah.
But you didn't know you were doing it.
Yeah.
Okay, you could smell trouble. Mm. You could see trouble before it starts. That's
what about racism and feminism? You know, what did you get? How did you get treated? Because it was the dark old days.
It was the dark old days. You know, where when I arrived, there were still no dogs, no blacks, no Irish. But do you know? I always thought that it's a fear of the unknown, and I don't know if it's because I had a different take on it than the. Maybe the black people brought up here, because I just saw it as, I never think humans are perfect. Mm-hmm. I haven't met a perfect human being. Mm-hmm. I haven't met
them. There's not a perfect race. There's not a perfect country.
There is not a perfect race.
There's no perfect. There'll be good and bad everywhere.
Precisely. Yeah. Yeah. I learned that during a genocide. Mm. There are special people in England, even then. And there were what I call the Untermenschen. Okay, there were kind of the classy ones, and then there were the peasants. and it's nothing to do with poverty. It's to do with peasantry of the mind.
Yeah.
So they had kind of peasant spirit, and they're the ones who just accepted you for what you can achieve, for how you are, for the person you are. There are people who can read your spirit, and there are people who cannot. Sadly, with media effect and upbringing, we have forgotten that people are spirits. Okay. You know, where most people say to me, oh, you think they will accept you? And I'm going, well, they're nice.
Yeah.
I can tell a nasty person from. And if somebody's nasty, believe me, I had no respect for anyone. I had no respect or fear of anyone. You know, because when you have been in a genocide, you've seen a body running without its head because the shrapnel, and then it trips. Then you know that we are incredibly formed and built. but we can be snuffed out like a worm. Why would I be afraid of someone who can perish in seconds? I cannot. And I cannot put someone above me. And I cannot put someone below me. Because we are all just disposable. Feminism, I look at the same way. Okay, we give birth to every living being on earth. It's the woman who does this.
I think we're the most powerful people on earth.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You give us your sperm, we multiply it. I speak to women and I say to them, do you know the power you have? Okay. I say to people, give me a room full of 50 men. I am comfortable because they're my sons. But give me a room full of 50 women. We're scary. So I say to them, I say, you know, my mother, I realize, because like I said, I analyze everything. I realize this woman, that with each child she had, God gave her gifts and multiplied them with each child. The strength she had was incredible. In my book, I told a story, and I tell it too on tour, about this man who came to our house looking for my sister, Maggie. Maggie was always said to be like a black Sophia Loren, and she attracted men like magnets. And this man came, brand new Mercedes, stepped out, this important man, dressed in brilliant white, gold braids. My goodness, I think he came to impress my mother. Because she had so many daughters, people think she want to get rid of them, you know, especially, you know, especially as you were in a genocide, you know, and enemies all around you, she must want to protect her daughters. So I think that's what was at the back of his mind. He came to our house. He said, is Maggie here? We were like, Maggie? So Maggie was at school, so we told him Maggie was upstairs, and we knew mommy was upstairs sewing. But we thought, well, how is she going to handle this very important man? My dear, he went upstairs and we heard him say, is Maggie here? Not even good afternoon. I mean, come on, if you have nine children, etiquette, good manners, behavior. And you want to come and look for one of her daughters who was a teenager. So we waited, we think, oh dear. But one thing the poor man didn't know was mommy had this koboko, which is like a horse whip. Okay, which is rolled up. And that thing, I know the reach of it. We all knew the reach of it. We know when she gets off that chair, you better, you know, because if that thing catches you, it hurts like hell for days. The next thing we knew, this poor man came running out of the room, scaling the stairs two or three at a time, trying to escape this woman, whipping him with his horse whip all the way to his car. I will never forget it. It was the funniest thing. That's why I'm not afraid of any man. My mother never was. She could whip that man, you know, all the way to his car. Oh dear. And it was a chauffeur driven car. So.
Can you tell me about your faith? Because obviously that, together with Stephen, you're both very, very religious.
My faith.
Are you religious or faith? What? How would you describe it?
I am of the Catholic religion, but I am God's child. And he made me, created me. He knows everything about me. He's magnificent. He loves me. I mean, my goodness. I mean, with God, I am like a child who goes into a crowd and knows his parents and never let him get lost. His breath is what I take. He is everything. He is everything. Everything I have is given to me. Everything I am comes from him. Everything I'm going to be is from him. You know, when people ask me, what would you want on your gravestone? I say, this is a true child of God. Now, that would be brilliant if that was spiritually engraved on my stone, not just...
Well, exactly. Physically. Well, your book being called The Faith of a Child.
Yes.
So faith is very important to you.
Faith is paramount to me. Faith is what keeps me sane. Faith is what makes me go on. I said to my brother, what a tough year. I said, yes, but we are tougher because the one who made us is greater.
Oh. Now, you brought up your children. You've had two children. You've got a daughter.
Emma Arrett, yes.
And you had a son, obviously, a bit later, Sebastian.
Yes.
And then also you worked really hard, but then obviously you took some time to bring them up, which is you're very lucky to be able to do that. And it's a fantastic job. But then you decided you want to do something for Nigeria. And you set up your own charity.
Yes, that came about when the First Lady of Nigeria, then invited me to come and help with her charity because I was on the committee of about 15 charities in the UK and a patron of about five. And she said she had this charity. She was working with children in Nigeria. Could I come and just look at it and advise? And I thought, oh, fantastic. You know, woman after my own heart. She was my teacher at school. And I had built up great expectations, which I must never do again about humans. Because I thought she would have, come on, we were 180 million. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe she's looking after a million children, maybe two. Maybe she just, gosh, she could be looking after 20. How exciting would that be? 14 children. I was so disappointed. Seriously. And I paid my way, luckily. Because I don't like to be in anyone's pocket, okay? So my brother said to me, let me show you where we're really hurting. Took me to a village 2 hours away. He supports this woman. He gives her about 10,000 naira every month to help look after the babies. She rescues babies from being buried alive, and she had 60. Wow. And the first lady of the country had 14 with 28 members of staff. But again, I think it was God's way.
Getting you there.
Precisely. Yeah. So I didn't bear any grudges about that because I just thought I came here so that my brother could show me this. And that was it.
And that was during the AIDS crisis, wasn't it?
That was during the... Yeah. But you know, I mean, my husband and I...
Is there still an AIDS crisis though?
Oh, it'll always be. It still is in England. It's just they don't talk about it. Still is in UK, all over the world. We just don't talk about it anymore.
And also in some countries, you can have drugs for it, of course.
Precisely. Yeah. You can have the therapy, the combination therapy, if you're rich enough. In Africa, you know, it was killing them off.
Also, they were very frightened of it because they thought that it was, they had a reason. Sorry, you've got to explain how they thought they got it.
It was the witch doctors, you know, because if something attacks a village, he's the one they turn to. And so he has to have an excuse for it.
Yeah.
And usually the excuse is frightening, which is sad. So he tells them that if a baby is diagnosed with HIV, it's an evil spirit.
Oh.
And it will be an evil spirit. If it kills you, it's an evil spirit. That's how villagers see it. That's their innocence. Yeah. And their, besides, they don't have a word like virus, immune system in their language. Okay. So he's ruling this whole thing, which is why these babies I met were rescued from forests where their mothers couldn't bear to bury them alive because this was the advice of the witch doctor. So they left them to their fate. So, you know, the hunters and farmers would hear a baby cry and go and bring it to this woman. She started collecting. I know. You can imagine how I felt. When I came back here, I thought, that's it. I said to my husband, I'm not traveling. What am I doing? Living out suitcases and singing to people who have happiness. And I said, this is what I want to do. And 18 months later, we've built our first clinic. But it developed into clinics because what I wanted to build was awareness centers. And then I realized they're so frightened of it that they're even told to bury their babies and, you know, leave the babies in the forest. Who is going to come near? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. A building that houses this evil spirit. And so that came to me just one night. And I thought, you see, angels are never asleep. God's angels. You just you just need to follow your instincts closely. I just literally just woke up and thought, oh my God. No, what I need is a clinic where they actually come and have the children. And that was it. And that's how we turned around and we started building clinics. We now have five and a school.
Lovely. How lovely. So that's the success. Now, also you ended up doing a big fundraiser in the Royal Albert Hall. That was that was one gig, wasn't it?
I tell you what. Now, this is where I just love to talk about God. Because when I came back from Nigeria and I said to my husband, I want to start a charity. And he said to me, if you want to save those babies... It was one little boy who only had 2 months to live, which is a shame, but he died within 2 weeks. So my husband said, well, let's go and see what we can do for the others. And he said, you start a charity. And I went, okay. He said, but you need to fast track it. Let's try and see if we can get a good patron. I said, good Peter. And he said, someone like John Major, Prince Charles. And I went, really? Really, Stephen? John Major, Prince Charles? Come on now. He said to me, well, if you really want to do this, then you have to aim for that. So I thought, okay. I thought, this is an excuse. So I said to the Lord, okay, the ball is in your court. You want me to do this? It's Prince Charles or John Major. You heard Stephen. In my mind, I thought, oh, good. Well, I don't have to do anything. I think I can forget this. I'm telling you, Josephine, the same day the phone rings. And it was from John Major's office. He is retiring. They're having a party for him because he's retiring from politics. And he would like me to sing.
That is incredible.
And magic. I thought, no way. Mm. I thought, how fast do you move? Yeah. You know, I thought, no way. So I said, no charge. Mm. Could I please sit next to Sir John? Would you put Stephen and I next to Sir John?
Oh.
Done. That was it. The charity was born. So Sir John being patron encouraged me to get other patrons, you know, big names. I mean, bigger names than I thought I could get. And then I decided that I was going to have it at the Royal Albert Hall for some strange reason or the other. When I went to the Royal Albert Hall, they said, oh, no, Pat, you couldn't do that. It's AIDS and Africa. And they said, you will struggle to fill this place. Mm. And then they said the wrong word. They said, well, you should have it this somewhere. There's a place called Fairfield Hall. I felt insulted. I said, I'm going to have it here. And that was it. So I went to Major Sir Michael Parker, for whom I had done about 17 years every Christmas at Royal Albert Hall. And I said to him, this is what I'm trying to do. And he said, no way. He said, AIDS Africa. He said, that hall is impossible to fill. And they were quite right. I didn't have a secretary. I didn't have a committee. Okay. I just had God's angels in my head. So Sir Michael said, yes. And that was the beginning. But they still said no at the Royal Albert Hall. But the day we had the meeting, Sir Michael was going to come to the meeting as well. He was late. And I thought, oh, sweet Lord, why are you making this so hard? And just as we were about to finish the meeting, Sir Michael, who's like a gentle giant, okay, breezes in, says, I'm so sorry, the Queen Mother delayed me. Mm-hmm. And I went, way. We got this. It was a matter of which days did you want? So I said, give me 12 months because I've decided what I want to do. I want to have a mass choir. She said, mass choir, where are you going to put them? I said, well, I've looked at this drawing. There's 600 choir here, which is what you usually have. But that and the dress circle and the stall is 3,000. That would be my choir. She said, you can't do that. She said, that's your best seat. Those are the most expensive seats. I said, yes, but I'll get them to raise funds. They might raise very little. And then maybe we'll make the money on the boxes and their parents will come. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah. You had 3,000 people.
3,000 gospel singers. We had dignitaries, wrote a letter. They said, no, you can't have the royal box. You have to get permission from Buckingham Palace. And they wouldn't give it to you unless you have a royal. They gave it to me and even had members of staff, royal staff. And on that night, it was incredible.
And literally the roof was risen.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I remember.
How often did you cry or were you crying all the time?
No, I had no time to cry.
Why?
Because I woke up 6 o'clock in the morning for a TV interview. I had to welcome the 3,000. We had to be at the Royal Albert Hall from 7:30 in the morning. We didn't leave till 1:30 the following morning. My children ran themselves. Oh, they were wonderful. And that's why my daughter is doing what she's doing, because she's had the training. And my husband had to carry me piggyback because apart from, I never sat down from 6 o'clock till 1:30 the next morning. My knees were swollen. My ankle was swollen. I couldn't walk up the stairs. But what I did was I woke up that morning and I said to God, I said to him, okay, every single person in that hall I have spoken to. And I said, they have come because you have brought them to save the lives of these children. I said to him, I want every single angel you have in heaven to be there. I don't care if we're breathing them in. I want everyone in that room to take something of you with them when they leave. Well, okay. I had that prayer, and all throughout the day, things just move. And it took 12 months of 18 hours a day, 7 days a week. Okay. Ian Duncan Smith comes backstage because I had politicians and celebrities introduced.
Cliff Richard sang, didn't he?
Cliff Richard sang. So I had people, Gabrielle sang. So I had the politicians introduce the celebrities on stage. Ian Duncan Smith said to me, "Patty, I don't know what happened tonight." He said, "But whatever it is, it belongs here." He patted his heart, said, "I'm taking it with me." And I said to him, "Oh, you don't know what you have just said to me." I said, "You don't know." And, you know, when he left, I said to my husband, "How good is God? He has just made that man tell me that he heard my prayer this morning, and every single person in that hall was blessed today." It was incredible. So you see, my faith is, that's why it's like that of a child. I have too many. Do you know what I mean? I have so many things that the Lord, every day, every second, is in charge. He is my life.
Now, there's many more things we could have talked about today. Your OBE, your everything going on. I mean, you're also going back on stage, as you said, after 30 years, you're going to be performing. But I think we've got to end it there because we're on a high with God and it feels really
indeed,
good.
Indeed. Well done, Josephine. That
so
is the place.
Thank you, Patty, so
thank
much
you
for coming
so
on to
much.
Radio Gorgeous. And
thank you.
For more about Patty Boulay and to find out about her concerts, her books, to just be in touch with Patty, do contact her. Go to pattyboulay.com and I'll spell it out. PattyBoulaye.com. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Josephine.
You can always find spectacular women on Radio Gorgeous.
The answer was here all the time. too much. There's nothing more I can think of to say to you. All you have to do is look at me to know that every word is true. Don't cry for me, Argentina. The truth is, I've never left you. Oh, my wild days, my mad existence, I've kept my promise. Don't keep your distance.
Never miss a podcast again. Sign up at radiogorgeous.com. Radio Gorgeous, podcasts for women.